WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Essie Adujan is a Canadian writer whose third novel, Washington Black, has been shortlisted for the Man Booker Prize, an award given annually in Britain to a novel written in English and published in the UK. The winner will be announced tomorrow. We'll hear an interview with Adujan, but first, our book critic Maureen Corrigan has a review. She says Washington Black is a vivid travelogue through some strange territory.
Essie Adujan's new novel, Washington Black, opens on wretched terrain that will be familiar to anyone who's read slave narratives. The year is 1830. The location is a sugar plantation in Barbados. Our narrator, an enslaved 11-year-old boy named George Washington Black, Wash for short, tells us that the old master has recently died. Wash is now standing to attention as a carriage carrying his new master arrives. He's a pale, sinister-looking man named Erasmus Wild. Looking at him, Wash comments, "He owned me, as he owned all those I lived among, not only our lives, but also our deaths, and that pleased him too much." Readers will naturally anticipate that a tale of brutalities, small moments of grace, and thwarted escape attempts will follow. Except that's not quite what happens. In short order, two escape attempts here are successful. Wash breaks away from that plantation, via hot air balloon, no less. And Essie Adujan also breaks away, in her case, leaving behind the confines of the conventional historical novel and transporting readers into the giddy realms of Romantic-era travelogue and scientific exploration. In Washington Black, Adujan has created a wonder of an adventure story, powered by the helium of fantasy, but also by the tender sensibility of its aspiring young hero, Wash Black. Let's backtrack a second to that opening scene at the plantation. The new master is not the only white man who steps down from that carriage. His younger brother, Christopher Wild, nicknamed Titch, also alights. He turns out to be a rather decent man of science who's brought along the materials to assemble what he calls a cloud cutter, a hot air balloon attached to a boat-like gondola. Titch enlists Wash as his assistant, teaching him to read and in the process discovering that Wash possesses a skill for executing detailed scientific drawings. Across the color line, the two strike up a kind of friendship, so much so that when it seems likely that Wash will be killed in wrongful retaliation for the death of a white visitor to the plantation, Titch fires up the gas canister, cuts the ropes that tether the cloud cutter to earth, and together the two ascend into a tempestuous nighttime sky. "I began to cry," recalls Wash, thinking of this extraordinary moment. "The air grew colder, crept in webs across my skin. All was shadow, red light, storm fire, and frenzy. And up we went into the eye of it, untouched, miraculous." If only that escape were the soaring conclusion to Wash's adventures, not just the beginning. But inevitably, the friend's attempt to float above the consequences of race springs a leak, and their balloon comes crashing down to hard historical realities. A multitude of plot twists ensue, taking first Wash and Titch, and then Wash alone, to the Arctic, Nova Scotia, London, and even to the bottom of the sea. Certainly, much of the pleasure of reading Washington Black derives from Adujan's ingenious storytelling gifts, but her novel is more than just a buoyant bauble. Wash is weighted down throughout his travels by the burdensome question of identity. For one thing, he can never predict how other characters, whether they be black or white, will see him. The prize scientific education he received from Titch elevates Wash, but also makes him a curiosity, much like the solitary little orange octopus he captures on his underwater dive to later exhibit. Wash resolutely places his faith in science to advance human enlightenment, but midway through the novel, he experiences a harsh awakening. "I had long seen science as the great equalizer," Wash says. "No matter one's race or sex or faith, there were facts in the world waiting to be discovered. How little thought I'd given to the ways in which it might be corrupted by human beings." Washington Black is an unconventional and often touching novel about the search for transcendence above categories. As she tries to do for her hero, Wash, Essie Adugin clearly aims to carry her readers up, up, and away.
Maureen Corrigan teaches literature at Georgetown University. She reviewed Washington Black by Essie Adugin. Now we're going to hear an interview with Adugin. She's a first-generation Canadian whose parents emigrated from Ghana. Her last novel, Half-Blood Blues, was about black jazz musicians living in Nazi Germany in the 1930s. It was also shortlisted for the Man Booker Prize and won Canada's prestigious literary award, the Giller Prize. She spoke with Fresh Air producer Sam Brigger.
Essie Adugin, welcome to Fresh Air.
Hi, I'm really pleased to be here.
The plantation of your novel is in Barbados. I gather you do a lot of research for your work. Did you find that plantations in Barbados were much different than the ones in the United States?
You know, I'm not, I'm not a full-blown historian, mm-hmm. but, you know, given my readings, from my sense of things, it seems as though life on plantations in the Caribbean was much more, you know, it was much more brutal. This is kind of an ironic thing to say, but the sense of preservation of one's workers, you know, they were more expendable. So the cruelty was, you know, the death rate was much higher. The conditions and circumstances of slaves' lives were much more dire, and you know, it's quite horrific to have to do that research, but very important for me to show what that was like.
The main character of your book is George Washington Black, who goes by the nickname Wash. And he's a field worker on this plantation, but one day he gets a call to go serve at the main house for dinner, which is a terrifying prospect. But the master's brother is there. His name is Christopher Wilde, who goes by Titch. There's a lot of nicknames. And he's a naturalist, and he's building a hot air balloon. And he requests that Wash be his assistant, mainly just because he's like the right weight. He's as for ballast for the balloon.
Yes.
And it's a moment that changes Wash's life forever because a bond forms between him and this white man, Titch. And Titch will eventually help Wash escape. But it's such an arbitrary moment and such an arbitrary change in this boy's life. And that arbitrariness forever haunts Wash.
Christopher does choose Washington because he sees him as, you know, being helpful to his experiment, and that he is, you know, precisely the right weight to man his aerostat, which is, you know, kind of a cruelty in itself to look at somebody and think that of them. But then Washington really surprises him with his natural gifts. Like, he has no idea, you know, that this young man is just completely, you know, so naturally gifted at drawing, and he has a you know, good sense for aeronautical methodologies and all of this. He really comes into his own under Titch. But, you know, there is that sense, and part of what I was trying to suggest or explore in Titch's character is, you know, although he's an extremely liberal-minded man for his time, you know, there are limits to his thinking, that he is in a lot of ways still tethered by certain ideas and notions of his era. You know, he's an abolitionist, so he truly has a very general belief in the rights of man. it's kind of a very prescribed belief, but in terms of applying this personally to people, it's a little bit more difficult for him.
Right, and his argument for trying to end slavery is that slavery won't allow white people to get into heaven if they allow such cruelty.
Yeah, that's one of his main ideas about it. And, you know, this is kind of central to his philosophy about life. But, you know, having said that, he's somebody who very much does feel a great affection or comes to feel a great affection for Washington. And so there's that dichotomy in his personality that was so interesting to me.
So although Wash escapes from slavery and becomes a free man, he is not free from the time he lives in and, you know, is haunted by his time on the plantation. And I think one of the points you're getting at in the book is how much freedom is available to someone born into slavery, and also how free are the people complicit in the slave economy?
Yeah, exactly. I think that Titch, for instance, likes to believe that because he has these enlightened ideas that he is, and because he's actually trying to do something to end slavery itself, you know, I think he has a sense of himself as being quite a moral person. And he goes into the world with that feeling about himself and feeling quite good about his place in the world. But he's not really thinking about the fact that, you know, for all of his scientific pursuits, this is being funded by slavery, and he's kind of turned a blind eye to that. And so he's profoundly affected by it because he wouldn't be able to do what he does without that dark commerce going on. And also his family relationships are all tangled because of this. But by no means is his suffering anywhere near the suffering of somebody like Washington, who is not free. He's bodily not free, he's psychologically not free, and when he becomes physically free, he's somebody who's still not free. He's obviously suffering from having been born and raised in bondage, and he's somebody who, when he goes out into the world, he is still who he is. He's a black man. He's a man who's been disfigured as well, so he has that a sense of being physically marked when he goes into the world and being recoiled from. And also psychologically, he's still trying to sort out what that means to be free.
Wash has a scientific mind. He's a naturalist, and he likes to draw beautiful images of marine life. And he befriends this famous marine scientist and his daughter, and eventually will go on to create the first aquarium in London. However, it looks like he's not going to get any credit for the creation. The marine scientist will take credit. And that's a subject you've written about in an essay recently called The Silencing of Black Scientists.
Yes. So I was interested in the idea that just these forgotten figures in the history of science, forgotten black figures. And you know, there was that wonderful biography of Henrietta Lacks and the harvesting of her cancer cells as being the foundation for research into cancer, which the Rebecca Skloot book, which was so fascinating. And I think that that book really touched upon something for me, which was that when we think about the history of black people in science, and you're certainly putting this into search engines online, what comes up is the history of black people as subjects of scientific research rather than the history of black scientists. And so this was very interesting to me. And so when I was asked to write an article about black people in science, I started really digging into it and came up with the story of a young woman called Alice Bell, who, when she was in her very early 20s, developed like a serum using chalmugra oil. So this was oil from a tree that grows in Hawaii, to put leprosy into remission. And people knew that chalmugra oil was something that could put leprosy into remission, but it was, you couldn't take it orally because it would instantly come back up. It was just so bitter and terrible. Nobody could keep it down. And also to just inject it, it was so, I guess, viscous that it would stay under the skin in like a bubble. And so she developed a way for it to be absorbed into the bloodstream. And she did it when she was, 22 years old. Mm. And almost overnight, leprosy in Hawaii went into remission. It was really remarkable. And I just thought, this is an incredible story. And I don't know why we don't know more about this. In the end, she ended up passing away at the age of 24, I believe. She was, it was the advent of World War I. And she was teaching a lab on how to properly use a gas mask, and she ended up inhaling mustard gas, and she passed away. And unfortunately, she died before she could write up her findings, and into a sort of official, paper. And so what happened was a colleague of hers at it was the president of the University of Hawaii, ended up co-opting them, like stealing them and putting his name on the findings. And it was a while before her other colleague stepped forward and said, no, this was not his doing. He was already sort of looking for a way to patent this serum that she had developed. And this was not an isolated, just looking at the history of black scientists, this kind of a theft wasn't abnormal. And so I was just really interested in that.
Essie Adugin, thank you so much for being on Fresh Air.
Oh, thank you. It's a pleasure.
Essie Adugin spoke with Fresh Air producer Sam Brigger. Her new novel, Washington Black, is shortlisted for the Man Booker Prize. The winner will be announced tomorrow.